Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. We're your hosts, Harold and Rachel. Glad you're joining us today. How you doing, Rachel?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm sick of the heat, so hopefully it ends soon.
This is a kind of like take two for us on this podcast episode. We started yesterday to record. My internet went down, so we were talking and kind of shooting the bull for a little while, and we were just getting ready to start, and the internet went down. So we retry again tomorrow. So here we are.
Take two. Thankfully, it didn't end before when we were in the middle of it, because it's really hard to start over.
Yeah. So this episode is actually going to come out a little late than what we've been posting. But, you know, hey, that's all right. Because we had to these things happen, you know, and we don't really work ahead too often. I mean, sometimes we'll get one or two ahead and then we'll kind of let them fall behind and we'll be like right up to date again. So we don't work too far ahead. But anyway, what's going on your homestead?
Oh, tomatoes. Lots of tomatoes. Yeah, you know, we're a couple of weeks behind you up here, and the tomatoes are just starting to come on, and they're coming fast. Like, we had the last 4 days have been very hot, even for anywhere else, they're hot. So it's not just northern Michigan hot. We're talking, it was like 96, 97 degrees. So the tomatoes got ripe really quick.
Yeah.
And so I have lots of those, and I've been dehydrating lots of herbs and trying to find things to do with all of the carrots.
Carrots, huh?
I have so many carrots. I think I'm going to try to dehydrate some. I've never done carrots.
Have you ever just tried storing them just raw? I mean, yeah. Like in sand or anything like that, or what do you do?
Not in sand, but I've stored them in my extra refrigerator.
Okay. Yeah.
And they store several months. It's just, I just don't have room for the amount of carrots.
I had a root cellar. They had a root cellar and they were storing them in sand and they were holding up really well, like several months, and they were pulling them out. And every once in a while, they pull out one that would look like it was a little bit, you know, past due. But but most of them looked really, really good.
I look forward to the day I have a root cellar.
Yes. I've got a couple books on, I've read on them. I think about it. And then I go, do I really want to go dig in a root cellar? I don't know. I'd love to have one though. I would. Yeah, I have a basement.
Super handy.
Which I have a basement that I think and I was even talking about that one time. And I still think it's very likely that I could do that. One side of it almost looks like it used to be a root cellar. It's got like a door on it, but it was like old school. It doesn't really have any fans or anything. Like I would want to get some air circulation in there a little bit better and things.
Yeah.
But the way it's designed, it almost looked like maybe when they built the home like 100 years ago, like it was used for that. But then since it just got turned into storage and it just, you know, but I think, like I said, I have a couple of books and I was doing some study on it here a while back. And I thought, man, I think if I got some, you know, like a small, like I've seen some people think like almost like a computer fan and run some, you know, have some aeration kind of very mildly flowing through and the way you store things and put some shelves and stuff down there. And I think I could turn it into a.
I've seen people do that in a corner of their basement. If we were going to stay here, our plans were to turn a corner of our basement into one.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're super nice because you can keep things. You know, they, especially carrots and potatoes and apples, those kind of things can keep for a really long time if you have the right humidity and temperature.
Yeah, that key is the humidity and the temperature. And it's just and temperature usually ain't a big issue in a basement, but humidity can be. And, and with mine, it is. I mean, because it's not really a living basement. You know, it's just kind of like place to go work on the pipes pretty much. So, you know, it needs a lot of upgrading to get it in a position really for that. You know, I used to grow food down there. I used to grow lettuce and some grow beds down there, but it's not really great for storing food, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I do want to
I'm sure with modern technology you could do it pretty easy. I mean, like computer fans and a dehumidifier and
for sure.
Yeah. Put some insulation in the walls to keep that area a little bit cooler than the house. And it's
definitely cool on one of them things on the list of things I'd like to do around here. That's what always surprised me. People just don't really understand when everybody always thinks about, you know, I live in town and, you know, there's not so much stuff I can't do. There's so much stuff I haven't even done yet in town, you know, living on an urban homestead. I mean, there's still sections of my property that I could do things on that I ain't doing.
Right?
Things in my house I could do things with that I haven't, there's so many projects left to do still on this urban, and I've been doing it for years and I still haven't got to some of the things I could be doing. And
yeah, and your property is so beautiful and so full from the pictures. It's
from the pictures. I zoom in.
And that's why I say, that's why at the end of every podcast, I say grow where you're planted, because you can do so much in such a small area.
It is amazing. And like I said, it's still amazing how much I could be doing that I'm not even doing yet. I mean, it's
before I started growing anything. I mean, I started growing stuff, but before I started growing things in quantity enough to can, I just started going to farmers and getting stuff. I didn't grow it myself. I mean, and that's a form of homesteading. And and slowly we've built the garden and figured out how to grow enough to can. And,
absolutely,
you know, you can do so much, even in an apartment. It's amazing what you can do.
Well, unless we turn this into a podcast episode on urban homesteading, we'll go on to what I'm doing around my homestead. And it's been a lot of fall cleaning and organizing, you know, about 2 or 3 times a year, I feel like everything just gets totally so out of whack. I can't find any of my tools. I can't, things just get crazy. And it's like, now it's like, okay, well, I'm actually restoring an old golf cart. We got this old golf cart gave to us. I mean, it's like 1987, but those are kind of cool, you know, and I've been kind of going through and restoring it, but like, I can't find half my tools. And it's like, I ain't got room to work on things. And I'm like, okay, before I really get deep into that project, I really need to clean this barn. So I've been putting things up and moving things around and getting things right again. And it seems like I do that 2 or 3 times a year. And then stuff just starts getting crazy again. But
I know, no matter how hard you try, it just gets,
it seems like every fall you kind of got to do that too, you know, and before winter, because I want everything kind of, because I'm going to be in the barn working a lot in the winter. So I definitely want it like really organized, really clean, because I'm going to be in there a lot working through the wintertime. So I want it, you know, it's always about this time of the year. I'm kind of trying to get everything kind of back in order. But doing some pond cleanup outside too. I had the pond was getting out of hand. And I usually do that in the spring and then I'll do it kind of in the fall, you know, and because that little backyard ponds are great. They're beautiful. They're fun. They even have a lot of benefit for a homestead. But man, can they get nasty if you don't take care of them. So a couple times a year.
Sediment and algae.
Yeah, sediment. And, you know, of course, the fish waste. There's fish in there and there's things going on there. And then a lot of leaves land in there and sink to the bottom. And, you know, just things happen. And then I got to clean the filters and I try to clean out. It has a little bit of a waterfall. So I clean out that and, you know, just get everything cleaned up because it starts getting pretty nasty. So usually there's a big cleanup in the spring and a big cleanup in early fall. And,
nice. That. But you just take that water and then put that out on your garden then?
Yeah, I'll spray
some nice fertilizer right there.
And I'll just empty it out on all the beds and everything, get it all cleaned out. I won't empty it out 100% because I actually won't even take out the fish. And then I have like a tool that I can like suck all the stuff off the bottom with without pulling the water out, you know, kind of like a fish tank thing, clean, but it's bigger for ponds. And I'll suck all that out of there. And then like I said, I'll do a kind of a water change, about probably 75% water change on it. And then just clean all the stuff up. It's just kind of a project, but it's not a pleasant project. It's surprisingly, the pond won't look that bad. But then when you start pulling some of that sludge and some of that nastiness out of there, there's an odor to that that's definitely not pleasant.
Oh, yeah. I know our pond that is not a homemade pond gets that funk.
Yeah, it will. It'll get pretty nasty. So it's clean up. And my grandson has been filling it with, you know, I used to just keep goldfish in it and stuff and koi and things like that. But now he's getting into this netting thing where he goes out nets, you know, and he likes to catch. He'll catch these little chub minnows. He'll catch crawdads. He'll catch snails and frogs and whatever he can catch. And he brings it all here and throws it in that pond. It's got quite the diversification of life in it now, unlike before. So, and that's cool. Let him have his fun. I think it's great. He's teaching me how to be a 6-year-old kid again, and I love it. So it's all good. So anyway,
that sounds fun.
Yeah. And he happened to be here, yesterday or a couple days ago when I was cleaning it out, when I started cleaning it out, and he was dipping some of the stuff out and having a good old time with that, but I don't know. whatever. He's having a good time, so I don't care. But yeah, and also dehydrating the goji berries. Like everything has pretty much ran its course on the berries except for goji. Now it's time for the gojis to start making their show of things. It's about the time of the year they really get really good and ripe, but they're horrible tasting raw. So I don't like them.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Yeah, they're horrible. Like I'll put them in a smoothie or something raw because you can't really taste them in that. But they're great dehydrated. I don't know what it is. You turn them into a little goji raisin and they have a flavor that's just great. It just concentrates the sugars in it or something. I don't know what it does.
Okay.
But it changes the flavor profile quite a bit and it makes them really good where I'll eat a handful of them right here and there, you know. And so I've got a ton of them in the dehydrator right now, dehydrating, and probably run a whole nother batch or two through there before it's over because there's a lot of those. And the only thing I enjoy about the goji bushes.
Mine still are not producing, so.
Are they going crazy, your goji? I didn't even know you had goji.
I do. I have two small bushes. I put them out at the homestead, but it's been just kind of dry for a couple of summers, and I think that's why they're making it, but not thriving.
Where mine are, they catch a lot of the runoff. I actually have a rain barrel sitting right there, but then the rain barrel gets full and overflows and goes
so they're
right where they're at. So they get quite a bit of water there. And yeah, they're doing pretty good.
Maybe I'll have to move them closer to a pond where they get more water.
I've tried to eradicate them a couple times, but it's pretty difficult, to be honest with you, because the little bit of value I get out of them. I mean, I do enjoy the dehydrated gojis, but honestly, it's the one thing I kind of wish I probably wouldn't have planted on my property. or definitely not where I planted them anyway. But even if you planted them, I mean, anywhere, they get massive and just...
See, mine are still just not doing great. So I'm hoping...
They can take over a space, quite a bit of space too. It's pretty amazing.
Maybe you just need, you've tried to move it already. I think you told me that.
Well, I've taken a bunch, I've dug up, they spread, you know, through the roots and I'll dig them up and I'll pot them and I've gave them to people and, you know, and I have moved them a couple places and this is about the time I really started figuring out that I didn't want them anymore. So I actually did manage to dig them up. I mean, if I was mowing there all the time, of course it would kill them. So where I'd put them was a place I could just mow if I didn't want them there. And that worked, you know, it killed them. But where they're at, they're kind of right up against my house, which was a very bad idea on the south side. And
they get picky too.
Oh, they're, I mean, the thorns. What was it? Somebody told me that they call that the, I forget what it's something about the, I forget the term, but they said it's kind of one of them bushes that you plant under your daughter's window.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Out her boys
like
from
rose bushes and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, cause they say, cause man, these things got some thorns on them that are just not very forgiving. Yeah. And So yeah, they'll poke you and cut you pretty good getting in there. That's why I say if they get really big and bushy, it's actually hard to get to the berries without poking yourself because they get so thick. And yeah, they're not a pleasant plant. I don't really like them. I mean, in permaculture, I hear people talking about them all the time. Like, oh yeah, they're very prolific, but they're just not great raw. You have to really dehydrate them to use them. They're considered a superfood. You know,
they are. They got a lot of vitamins in them and minerals and stuff.
I don't know. It's not been one, especially on an urban homestead. It's not been one that I would plant again for sure. But So anyway, that's been what's going on here. I've done away with probably 75% of my garden at this point already.
Wow.
And put my beds to bed. So
you're further ahead than me and we have frost soon.
Yeah. I got so fed up with the weeds with a lot of the beds and I was just like, okay, I'm done with you and I'm done with you and I'm done. I just started taking stuff out. And, I mean, I left a lot of stuff just to kind of munch on, you know, but the canning stuff is pretty much over, except for probably the winter squash. You know, I got some.
I'm ready for it to be done. I'm ready.
So me too. I mean, I love the garden, but it really got out of control for me. I don't know what it was. The weather was just like the perfect storm for weeds this year or something. I don't know. Weeds were, I couldn't stay on top of it. It was so bad that I'm actually considering next year not doing the mulch thing and instead doing the landscape fabric. And then just burning the holes in it and planting my plants.
I'm actually buying some landscape fabric, at least for a part of my garden. Because
I already did.
Redo what I did this year. But I've also was busier this year than I've ever been with projects and work. And
what I did was I actually already put it down over all my raised beds. I have the raised beds beside the house. I actually covered them with the landscape fabric. And I'm just going to let them kind of, I actually filled them full of just biomass, like comfrey leaves and just other biomass. And I filled them. And then I put the landscape fabric over the top of it and kind of sealed it in for the winter, just so that stuff can really break down, because water will go through that, but you know, it'll really break that down. I'm hoping maybe just the heat and the lack of sunlight will maybe do away with some of the weed seeds too, and let that really set under that biomass all winter. And probably doing the same thing with, I don't know, I'm just going to make some decisions, because I've never had weeds as bad as I had them this year. It got really out of control.
The problem is we are both so busy working and stuff. It's really hard to keep up with it all. I don't like the way it looks.
Right.
But it is really hard to keep up with it all.
Well, folks are probably wondering what our topic is if they didn't see it in the, when they clicked on the listen to the podcast. But today we're going to talk about homesteading and responsible preparedness. We figured it was a good time because, well, September is National Preparedness Month, according to ready.gov, your government agency that promotes actual preparedness, right? You think, sometimes I think people get the idea that, especially those folks are totally anti-government, and maybe I border on that, right? So I won't say too much bad about that, but they're not all against you being somewhat prepared, right? They have a whole website dedicated.
They do
preparedness, because there's just this level of common sense preparedness. It's not about building bunkers. It's not about, you know, building Faraday cages around all your electronic devices. It's not like that kind of preparedness. It's just common sense preparedness. It's what I consider being responsible, being a responsible homesteader. And today we're going to talk about some of that. We're going to talk about some of the things that you and I both feel are like just responsible preparedness, things you should kind of concentrate on and have a focus on your homestead, and for your family, that are just, I feel like, common sense. You know, 100, 200 years ago, it's just what people did because they wanted to survive through the winter, or they wanted to survive through any kind of a, you know, event or anything. Now people think you're being out of control or something. You're some kind of prepper if you do some of these things, which they're just common sense things, I think. And and we're going to talk about some of those things today.
Well, but I think that too. And then I took a class at a homestead conference I went to about, you know, homestead safety and first aid and stuff like that. And one of the things that they started with was the statistics for homestead and farm accidents. And for the most part, you know, a lot of stuff doesn't get reported as an accident because us homesteaders just fix it ourselves. But of the accidents that happen, they're pretty significant. Like, there's a lot of accidents
where you, and get back to work. Huh?
Right. Yeah. But there's accidents where people get run over by tractors or, you know, just horrible stuff. And I think it's really prudent to be a little bit prepared. And then we also have had, I mean, Hawaii just had a fire. We had someone, we had an interview person that was actually affected by that. That was on the podcast.
I've been following some of his stuff on Instagram, and it really got a big portion of that homestead or that farm, and all around him. And they're just helping people. They're just trying to help people. I mean, there's so many people just out of their homes and can't get food, and their farm is really reaching out. And I sent that out in the newsletter a while back, just because
I saw it. Yeah.
And that just opened your eyes to the real potential. Stuff happens. You look at the smoke that was coming down from Camden, you know, so there's homesteds up there greatly.
That was affecting us here.
Yeah. But there's people probably had to leave their homes because it was so bad and just from forest fires and stuff. And then you think about earthquakes, you think about tornadoes, you think about hurricanes, and you just think about all the things, your floods and just, it doesn't have to be these, you know,
well, and even just to own three personal events
that, you know, yeah.
Even just your own personal, I mean, I had to end up with a family emergency where I ended up having to leave my home very quickly to be at the hospital very quickly in a very short amount of time. And so it just pays to be prepared. And we're going to talk about that today and some of the things that you can do to maybe not be the doomsday prepper, but make your life a little bit easier and be more prepared.
Yeah, just expand on that a little bit. Yes, sickness happens, and you know, you might not be able to go to work, or you might lose a job, and you know, it's hard to buy, you know, food and the things you need if you don't have them stocked up, you know, when you ain't got money. So, you know, and I look at my own situation. You know, I was off work for several months, you know, years ago with cancer treatment, because I had cancer. Mm-hmm. I had to go through a surgery. I couldn't work for a couple months, you know, while I was healing. And had we not had a lot of food put back and even money in the bank and some things going on there, that there was a level of preparedness there that helped us get through that. And that was just a couple months, but it's amazing how fast you can burn through things in a couple months, even, you know? So you just,
we're not that far removed from the pandemic where a bunch of people were left at home on, you know, financially, it was a struggle for many people. Myself, I went through, and this wasn't even during the pandemic. It was actually before, but I went through, I take thyroid medication, and my medication for over a year was hard to get. And,
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah.
You know, just having thought that through, and it's just really important.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess what didn't make our list, I want to kind of mention it here right off the bat, though. Having things is not just being prepared. You physically being prepared. That reminded me.
Yeah.
Be as healthy as you can, too, because, and I know there's just some things you can't control, like your situations, you kind of, you know, autoimmune diseases. These are things you really can't do anything about, but there's still a level of fitness, you know,
diet plays a role. And I mean, if I was eating junk,
but you know, just being as fit as you can be and as healthy as you can be can certainly help.
Yeah.
It's just a level of responsible preparedness. Right. So try to work on, that's just something every one of us should be working on, is trying to be as healthy as we can be. Because when I went down, that was the case. I was eating horribly. I wasn't exercising, I was doing things. And, you know, it led to cancer, which led us into a crisis, you know, in our life. So, yeah, just being healthy, or just being as healthy as you can greatly reduce even the need for being prepared if you're getting that situation, or make it easier to get through if you are healthy.
Yeah, for sure.
I see these people that, you know, and I don't, I'm careful about how I say this, because I don't, man, everybody has their own struggles. We all have our health and fitness struggles, right? But I mean, I've just seen this before, and I've seen these people who are promoting, you know, prepping, and they're big on guns, and they're big on buying the food and shoving it under their bed and doing all these things.
Right.
And because they're thinking it's more like World War III, end of the world cut type scenario, but they weigh 450 pounds. And I'm like, there's a lot of things that'll take you out quicker, you know, in that area than what you're talking about. And it's just, you know, and I feel for them. It's like, you know, that there's a level of preparedness. If you think that that's a possibility so much that you're doing what you're doing in your life, then you ought to be getting yourself in shape for that, because that's not going to help you in that kind of scenario, you know? But again,
even just being able to walk,
right.
You know, walk and move is huge, which homesteading is a huge help with that. I mean, it definitely keeps you in shape if you're pushing wheelbarrows around and moving dirt around, but
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll just jump into it here. I think when we think about preparedness, one of the first things, what do you think? What does it take to live, right? I mean, basic necessities of life. And the number one thing, I guess, other than air to breathe, would be water, right? You need water.
Yeah.
And so water storage is really important. If you're situation and you don't know what that situation might be, leads you to not be able to access water or access good water, you should have water.
Clean water is huge.
Clean water is important. So having water put up is important. And you have a few suggestions on here as far as storing it.
To be honest, we don't store a ton because we're on a well.
And you have a lake beside you too.
And we have a lake.
Purify if you had to.
Yeah. But I do have some though, because there's been times here where we get a snowstorm and the power's out for a little bit. So I use a lot of vinegar for either canning or cleaning or laundry. And I save those jugs because they're nice and thick. And I just fill them back up with water.
If you know people who drink a lot of soda too, the 2-liter bottles for put soda and stuff in are really stout, and they make good water.
Right. As well. But if you go to the store and you buy your gallon of water, that is going to, I've actually done that with distilled water before, and the jug just deteriorate so quick. And then you have a mess.
They're so thin.
Under
a kid, set them down too hard, they'll pop. I mean, I've done that.
Yeah. I had mine under a bathroom cabinet because we kind of try to keep a gallon in each of the bathrooms just so you can flush in case of an emergency or whatever. And it just made a huge mess under the cabinet. So now I do the vinegar or the pop bottles if you can find them, because we don't drink pop. So it's kind of hard to.
Right.
But yeah, so that's what, you know, and then having a water filter and.
Yeah, and I, you know, I started out with a Berkey, and I still have the Berkey canister, but I actually put the Pure Pour, is it Pour Pure or Pure Pour, whatever those filters. They actually changed the name of it. They did change the name. And I've actually got those filters in it now because I think they're a little bit better of a filter than a Berkey filter. So I've actually put those in the Berkey. But you actually suggested, and I had never heard of this water pitcher that you put on here, and I went and checked it out. I clicked on the link.
It's very good.
It is very good. I was watching some videos about it, actually. It ran me down a whole little rabbit trail, and I started looking into this, and I think we're going to pick us up one of these because it's really affordable. And
okay, I'll give you a hint, and I'll give everybody else a hint. So this, it's called the Zero Water Pitcher, and you can buy them. You can get them on Amazon, probably at Walmart. I have found several at thrift stores. I actually bought my mom two. I bought her a pitcher, and then I bought her a bigger one that holds more at thrift stores. And then you just buy the filter, but they actually filter really, they filter water really, really well. And it's affordable way.
Yeah.
You don't have $300 or $400 for, you know, one of the expensive stainless steel, either a Berkey. Berkey is still better than no filtration system. I just prefer, we're going to have to look it up.
Yeah. It used to be the Pour Pure, but I don't know what it's called now. It is. I think if you search that, still bring up the new, what it's called now, but.
We used to, when I worked at the doctor's office, it's called Pro One.
Pro One now. You're right. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
I just looked it up. So Pro One. And, but if though, you know, they're expensive,
there's a big
barrier to entry, but if you have $50, you can go buy a Zero Water Pitcher and a couple extra filters.
And I was looking at, there was people testing the water coming out of these versus the Brita filters. And it was way better. I mean, these little Zero Water Pitchers, I mean, it was like, it took out most everything where Brita didn't. So, I mean, very good recommendation there.
Look at your local thrift store. If you might be able to find the pitcher itself. We actually, the last time I went, I actually found sealed a box of filters sealed and everything. They'd never been used. And I bought those.
And I like it too. Cause you can set that whole thing inside your refrigerator and have cold water where, like with my Berkey, it's like, I don't get cold water. It's out there at room temperature. So, you know, I did like that too. I thought that was kind of cool, but how big was that? It was like maybe a 3 gallon or something. I can't remember what the size was. I looked at it.
They have a bunch of different sizes. And if you don't like plastic, they actually do have a glass one that you can buy for the zero water pitcher. They have a glass one that's actually really pretty, but it sits out on your counter. And I don't make any money or anything off of that advertising. I just like them. And the other thing you can do is have just, some filter tablets, especially if you're going to be drinking, like, I don't know, if you get desperate enough to drink pond water, obviously filter it, and you might need to use some water tablets.
And people might think, well, I live next to a lake, or I live next to a river, or I have well water, so I always have access to some water. Well, think about recently things like a train maybe derailing and dumping chemicals into the water systems, and you not be able to use that water. Have actual water stored that doesn't come from maybe one of them sources, because maybe you don't have access to those water sources, you know? So, think outside the box a little bit on that and have actually some extra options there.
It can happen.
It's like, I have a pond, you know, if I have to drink water, I could purify the water out of our pond. I have rainwater barrels, you know, that I mostly use for watering gardens, but you know, that's storage. I mean, we have, I don't know, a few hundred gallons of water storage. You know, I use water jars, but that's there. If we had to drink it, we could purify it, run it through the, you know, my Pro One system. Now, I guess I'll quit calling it a Berkey, and, you know, filter it and drink it if I have to. I mean, there's things you can do, but also just run some of that water in some jugs ahead of time and just store it.
Here's the deal too. Like, we have a local school here that years ago, there was a tire fire and they used a bunch of that. I think it's that foam that they used to use to put out fires. So there was a huge tire fire and they had to use all that foam. Well, now that foam has leached down into the groundwater and we have two subdivisions and a school, elementary school here, that the water is all contaminated with that. And the other problem with this is often you find out after you've been drinking it for a while. So it might be a good idea to start filtering it now.
And just quite simply, if you are on a well and the power goes out, I mean, yeah, you might have a generator you can run the pump with or whatever, still get water. But if you don't, you know, just having some water put up, I mean, it's a kind of a no-brainer to at least put a few gallons of water up. But, you know, as much as you might need it really for maybe 3 days or something, you know, I mean, you really think ahead a little bit, try to have enough water on hand to at least.
Yeah. If you go camping at all, you realize just how much water you go through.
Cleaning things and drinking, of course, and cooking and just all the things you need water for.
Yeah. So it's a couple of gallons a day per person, I would guess would.
Minimum. Maybe,
that would be being really, really Spartan with it.
Right. Yeah. So that was kind of the first thing, because I just think it's probably the most important thing, right? The water storage. And something just most homesteaders practice already. And if you're a good homesteader, you're going to do this. That's food storage. You're going to put food up. You're going to grow your food. You're going to put it up. But really try to think, what do we eat? What would it take to survive? Put that food up, because you're not growing everything. So you might want to pick some things up that you're going to need that you're not growing. You might need some flour and some sugar and some things to stock up on those things, because those are things you're going to need if you don't have access to be able to purchase food. Now, people are like, oh, that could never happen. Well, the reality is we've seen in some places that happen. We've seen bare shelves on the stores not so long ago. So, I mean, it's not out of the realms of possibility.
Yeah. And as a person with dietary restrictions, we had some real issues getting some things because it was really hard. I don't know why, but for some reason,
we would always just, you know, we'd have a few things we'd buy, but we still just mostly canned our food and put that up. We didn't really buy anything to put up much. A few things, like I said, those staples that we don't grow or whatever, we'd have some of that put up. But after that happened and the store shelves were bare, I went a little doomsday prepper and we actually bought some of the freeze-dried meals and we bought some of the buckets of freeze-dried meals just to keep, you know, because those things, I mean, I don't know, it's decades. Some of that stuff will last.
They'll last forever and ever.
You know what? I thought we just put that back and that's just extra security and it's something I don't have to think about. You know, we still put up our same amount of our canned stuff, but if it ever went beyond what I could, you know, have stored in that, we have that in an emergency. Or if it gets like that and you say got neighbors or friends or family that don't have food and you don't have to give them what you've put up, you could pass that out. And so it's good to have that for even other people that are in that situation who weren't responsible. So it's just something I think about now that maybe I didn't even think about 5 years ago. I wasn't even thinking about that. You know?
Right. Well, one of the reasons I do like dehydrated meals, freeze-dried meals, and actually tin, what they used to call it, tinned food. So tinned food in tins or cans they don't break. They're so portable. Where if my glass jars break easily. So it's just nice for them to be portable. Now you can get we actually keep the foil packets of like chicken and tuna in our cars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in my car bag, which I know sounds preppery, but it's not, because
not for me. Yeah.
When we had our family emergency, I knew that bag was in my car. So I had to do was get in my car and go. And I had food that was something that I could eat, because I can't plan on there being food I can eat with my food allergies.
We'll get to the storage and the for a bug out stuff in a little bit.
We will. Yeah,
but it is something that it sounds.
Yeah. Especially if you live in an earthquake, it's not, but if you live in an earthquake area, you might want to think about having things that aren't going to break when.
It's a good tip. Yeah. I like how you put in the show notes. Don't forget treats too. I think that's kind of cool.
It is nice to have a treat, isn't it? Especially you don't want to just eat beans and rice.
I think especially if you have kids, because, you know, especially when you think about a situation like that, if things got to where you were, you know, we were in a bad situation, and man, kids need a break from that. And a treat or something could definitely, you know, something snackery, you know, that they could just kind of get their mind, have a little bit of normalcy in their life in a situation maybe where, you know, you're having to rely on your food storage, you know. Kids need a break from that, the realities of that, I think, a little bit. And man, if something as simple as a treat could do that for them, you know?
Yep.
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
And just being prepared and having water and having food, depending on what the crisis is you're dealing with, can, you know, when that's out of the way and you don't have to worry about that, because that's the thing that would obviously be most on your mind if you didn't have those things. Well, now you can actually start thinking about those other critical aspects of the emergency response that you're dealing with, because get those out of the way. Okay, we got that. We don't have to worry about that. But what are we actually dealing with here? Now we can focus on that. And I think that could be critical depending on what your situation is, to have that out of the way. So, yeah, food storage, water storage, biggies. If you're a homesteader, you're probably at least.
Yeah, you probably are. Food
storage and probably the water storage as well. This is something that you have a huge heart for, this next thing. And I do too, but I think you really see the importance of it, because things you've dealt with, medical preparedness.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think it's something that probably we don't put enough focus on as homesteaders. Maybe some do, but maybe some don't. And if maybe you do, it's because you waited till it was too late to figure out how really important it was, or you've just heard somebody else dealing with something and now you're focusing on it. But it's huge. It can definitely save your life.
I mean, you don't even have to be a homesteader for this to be appropriate. I mean, but accidents on the homestead, you are more likely to have an accident on your farm or homestead than somebody that doesn't have one, just because of the nature of how it works. You're using tools, you're using a tractor.
Well, it's always been said that most accidents happen at home, but for a homesteader, it's even more the case, because we're, like you said, we're dealing with a lot of equipment, tools, and things that there's a risk to using them, you know. So you have to.
Yeah. And I mean, I have huge holes in my training. I do not have the training that I would like to have, but I'm working on it. And I think that that's important. I mean, basic first aid, CPR. You can get those at just your local, Red Cross, or sometimes they have lots of events. And your kids can do it too. Don't leave them out. I mean, they have babysitting courses that kids can take that include all of this. And I just think it's really important to be able to treat someone until help gets there.
Know how to treat a wound, dress a wound, know how to do CPR, know how to, you know, handle somebody who has had a major injury too, because you can actually cause worse injuries if you don't know how to handle people right. So yeah, good training and having the things on hand, a good medical kit, all the things you need, super important, you know. And also just being a homesteader, we're talking about things on the homestead that can cause accidents. Falling is huge, just getting cut is huge. Dealing with livestock, you can get hurt really bad dealing with livestock. Justin Rhodes
broke his nose
broke here recently by
he got headbutted by one of his milk cows.
Yeah. I mean,
I have a friend that had to have, she's got, I don't think they have this many anymore, but they used to have like up to 500 head of cattle, and she ended up with knee surgery after a cow ran her into fence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
they can hurt you. Hogs. Yeah. I mean, we had a neighbor when I was growing up, and he got attacked by a hog, and it literally ripped his kneecap out. And you know, they were older couple too. I mean, you know, they were quite a bit older than my parents, and you know, his wife's trying to help him and get him out of there. I mean, it was kind of a mess. And yeah, he ended up losing the bottom half of his leg over it.
Oh my word.
Yeah. Wow. And so, I mean, livestock, and you can definitely get hurt. So you need to
especially,
have.
Yeah.
Which brings me, you know, also just having other people around is important. You know, something like that, you could lose his life if you didn't have other people around to help. So, I mean, you're just being prepared, thinking ahead, knowing it's a possibility is huge. And just knowing those things exist and not be delusional and think, oh, it could never happen to me, because it can absolutely happen to you.
Yeah. And I mean, absolutely. And have plans in place. Yeah. I don't know if you have, it depends on where you live. Obviously there's places that some people live that they don't even have great cell phone coverage. So maybe they can't rely on their cell phone and they need to have
two-way radio,
radio to call somebody that's home, right. home and say, I need help. Yeah.
I think communication could be, could be huge.
But with that injuries technique. Certainly happen at any home, but probably more likely if we have a homestead or a...
Absolutely. And like you said, you a while back, you bought like chainsaw chaps for your husband to prevent injury. I mean, that's a big part too. Medical preparedness is even preventing injuries. So think about how to prevent
like
these injuries.
Glasses, safety glasses, and just the safety equipment that goes with whatever it is that you are using, because there's so many different tools that you can use. But safety equipment, when I actually bought cut-proof gloves for when we're butchering.
I wear.
I've done it too many times. And we were butchering a cow. And I knew when you're putting all that so much force trying to cut bigger pieces of meat and stuff like that, you're just more likely to. So I bought gloves, and I actually bought sleeves that go up my arms.
Yeah. Back in my early 20s, I for a short while, I worked as a meat cutter, and you can get cut so easy with them sharp knives and doing all the different cuts and just different angles and doing things. It's so easy to not pay attention for 1 second. And you don't even realize, because those knives are so sharp, you'll just see the blood before you'll ever feel anything. And it's like, what'd I do? And then you just see blood running down your arm, you know, and it's like, man, you know, it just happens so quick and you don't even realize it. So, definitely.
And ear protection. Don't forget ear protection.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's something you said it's becoming important in your house. So, I mean, it's just something we have to think about for sure.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, then we start getting into the things that people think more about when they start thinking about the big prepper things, you know, like power backup, right? Everybody's like always about the power backup. And, you know, then that's the funny thing is, though, we lived for how many centuries without power? So, I mean, it's not impossible to live without power, but now our homesteads so rely on it because a lot of our meat and things are in freezers and refrigerators and things. And if we don't want to lose that stuff, we have to keep that stuff going. So you do need a power source to keep those freezers running, to keep your refrigerators running. If it's, you know what, if you're in a situation where it's over 100 degrees, you know, and you might need air conditioning. I mean, it just depends on your fans, at least, you know, if you're not able to get cool, because especially if you're older, you know, older couples and stuff, that can really hurt you if the hot weather can.
And a few weeks ago you had rabbits in your barn,
animals,
you know.
Now I can put them in the tractor and get them in some shade where maybe there's a little outside. I mean, you can keep them alive, but they're miserable. I mean, right now it's upper 80s and they're miserable. I mean, they're just miserable looking at them. Having a way to keep this stuff running is important. You know, if it's wintertime, you might be able to take the stuff out of the freezers and put it outside or something, you know, until you get it back in the freezer when the power comes back on. But you know, have some power options.
Yeah.
Simply though, before we ever had a generator, I had some really large inverters that I could just click onto the batteries on my car and run my car and run extension cords into the house if I had to.
Yeah. And we went 8 days without power one time after a big snowstorm here. And that's what my husband did.
Yep. You can absolutely do it. And you'll use a lot of gas running your car doing it, but you know, it will keep the freezers cold, you know,
exactly.
And it'll do the job. So you can do that. But, you know, you think about lighting and things. Yeah. Have some, you mentioned in the notes, having some no power options. Like we have kerosene lamps that we can fire up and have some light, or candles, have some things like that. But, you know, it's also good. And I also think even if you have kids and you want to, if you're going to go several days without power, you know, it's nice if you could maybe put a TV on for the kids, because they're going to start getting really bored and really upset. If you have little kids or something, maybe have some ways to do some things for them, have some power options that they can do. You know?
Well, and depending why your power is out, it's really important to be able to charge things for communication, being able to charge your phone so that you can communicate. And having a, you know, having radio somehow.
And like we already mentioned earlier, if you have a well and you have a well pump, you might want to be able to power that pump and get some water too. Definitely. So,
well, and especially on a homestead, if you have your animals are going to still need food and water regardless.
Yep, you're going to be able to water.
You're going to have to be able to get water to them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, you just added into the show notes something. So I'll let you talk about that.
Oh, well, fridge and freezer alarms. We actually lost a bunch of food in a freezer that we didn't know was bad. And so now I have a freezer. I have freezer alarms in my freezers. And I was just looking to see what the brand name is because they are actually Wi-Fi.
Okay. And so if you get a chance, drop a link.
Yeah, I will. So they will send.
I don't have one of those on my freezer.
Yeah, I have them in my, because we have two deep freezers and I have them in both of them. And it tells me the humidity and the temperature and it sends me updates. And I don't even have to be home. I could be in.
So it'll like send you a text or a message on something?
It sends me a couple times a day. You can say how many times a day you want updates. Wow. Or you can just go in and check on it. But you'd have to have your Wi-Fi has to be working, or they can be Bluetooth. So if I don't have Wi-Fi, I could turn on Bluetooth. If I was using Bluetooth, though, I would have to be home probably.
Yeah.
But with the Wi-Fi, I can be in Florida and check if my freezers are working. So you can go on vacation and you can know if your freezers are working. And they aren't necessarily, these ones aren't necessarily for the freezer. They can, you can put them in any room. So you could put them outside of the room and know if a room froze or not. So it's just really, after losing several hundred dollars worth of food, it was worth the, I think it was $40 or something like that.
And honestly, if you live in a place where your power goes out a lot and for days, you might consider having a larger unit installed that automatically kicks on when the power goes out too. Cause like my parents had that at one point and my wife has some family that has that. And now he's passed now, but several years ago, he installed this system. He went and bought this military generator and it was ran off of like a straight six engine. I mean, I don't even know what it was. It was like a Chevy engine, I believe it was. This thing was huge. I mean, huge. And he put like a huge 275 gallon diesel tank attached to this thing. And he fixed it, went through and he bought it real cheap through a military auction and went through and rebuilt the motor and everything, installed this thing on the outside of his pole barn. And this thing would run his entire property. I mean, the barn, the house, everything kick on automatically. He had it set up to kick on automatically. The power went out. It was amazing setup. I don't know how much money he had in it. Cause like I said, he bought it through a military auction, I think pretty affordably, but he was also an electrician. So he was able to go through and do all the wiring himself and make it work right. So, you know, he saved that cost. But, you know, I don't know. You might want to go. We don't lose. Honestly, I live in town. We don't lose power that often. And when we do, it's usually just a few hours and it's back up. But if I lived in a place where it was, you know, pretty regularly going out and for days, I would absolutely consider that as an option. Try to say it would be that. And also just having solar, that's an option too. You could hook up solar and have a battery backup and run things that way. I mean, there's a lot of people going that route nowadays, and I think it's a great option, but it's a power backup, or you can have it as your main source, you know, whichever. But I still think even if I had solar, I'd want a generator as a backup in that case. Because when the sun's not out, you're going to need some way to still keep going.
Yeah. So it's called Jovi, which I will put a link in the show notes. If I'm saying it correctly, it says Jovi, and I have two of them. And right now my freezer is 2.8 degrees and 49% humidity. And I can do that right from my phone, no matter where I'm at. And it's nice. Even if you don't lose power, if your freezer dies.
Yeah.
You know,
could you put those on your refrigerator too? I assume
you can get more than one. I mean, you can get several. Yeah.
That is a great idea. And I think that's a really good idea because our freezers are actually out in my pole barn and I don't go. I mean, we literally go visit those things twice a week, maybe, you know, and drag stuff into the house and then we'll put it in the house freezer if we're going to cook that week or whatever. And we just don't go out to them every day.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing could be down right now. And I don't even know it because I haven't been in there for a couple of days. We probably smell it before.
And it's so heartbreaking to lose all of that hard work. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
That's why we got them.
I think we need to do that ourselves, invest in that. Good idea.
Yeah. So the next thing that we have on the list, which you added to the list, which is a really good idea, is a livestock care plan.
Yes. I think especially when you're dealing with certain tragedies like fire, like floods, like things like that, hurricanes, things like that, because a lot of times if you have to get out quick and you don't have a plan for that and you don't have a something thought and pre kind of set up to where you can act quickly, you could lose a lot of livestock. And I've seen it happen, especially with floods. I've seen that happen a lot with floods. Just be prepared for that. Know it's coming. You know, generally these things give you some time. Forest fires are different. Those don't give you a ton of time sometimes. Earthquakes, of course, but you know, things like hurricanes, you know, they're coming. So you know, floods, you know, a rain event's coming, it has a flood. You can start thinking ahead on a lot of these things and, you know, have a plan, have a crates, trailers, place to go with them. Have just an idea of what you're going to do if this happens. So just have a livestock care plan. And I think it's huge, because I don't think that's something people always think about, you know? And, you know, as homesteaders, sometimes we have a lot of livestock around, and that's a big job. Relocating your livestock can be huge. I mean, that can be a big job. And, you know, I just think a lot of people aren't prepared.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, if you're a really big homestead, I don't know if there's much you can do if you have a large herd of cattle, but.
Right.
But
if you know, if you have chickens and rabbits.
Right.
Goats or something, you can absolutely put together a plan to get rid of, you know, get those moved.
Yeah.
You know, if you're doing anything on a homestead level versus a farm level, say you have a couple pigs and a couple goats and, you know, a couple dozen chickens and those kind of things, you can put together a plan and have a relocation plan put together, you know, have some other homesteaders, and you could be the option for them if it happens for their homestead or whatever, you know. Yeah, you guys could work together, and you know, it's why, again, community can be really important.
I was just going to say that. That's why a community would be huge.
Yeah, absolutely. So
because I mean, even just barn fires happen just for one single farm.
Absolutely, yeah. And just a flood could happen on your. You have a creek and running through your property, but you know, a friend of yours who's a homesteader 5 miles away doesn't have that. Your creek can cause a flood on your property that makes it impossible for your livestock to be there. Where his doesn't, you know, so yeah, just have it as an option, you know, a short term thing that you could do quickly. And that's something we just always think about. So, and then something else I added, the next thing I think is very important because we don't always think about it either, because it's the thing maybe we don't want to think about, and that's emergency sanitation.
This is a huge one though, because I think depending on the emergency, and I'm thinking, you know, what's going on in Hawaii or some of the flooding that you see happen, depending on how long a situation goes on, you end up with sanitation, which then can cause sickness if it's not taken care
of. Absolutely. Yeah. And then which can lead to death. And it does in like a lot of third world countries when it happens, when they have a big thing like an earthquake that happens and they have no access to the way, you know, sanitation. It leads to a lot of death. It's usually the number one cause of the death. And by the end of it, you'll see that being an issue. So, it's just super important. Think about, you know, what supplies you need to stock up on to meet your basic sanitation needs. And that's to clean you, to clean things like dishes, to clean clothes, these things, you know. And, but the thing that we all think of though, when we think of sanitation, is the disposal of human waste, right? Cause that's the thing that can definitely lead to some serious disease issues or whatever, if you don't properly dispose of it. So what are you going to do? I mean, you can literally, honestly, if you live in a place where you have a septic system and if that's still functioning, but you just don't have water, you can pour water down and make it flush. You can just, you know, pour the water down, get it down. If you don't have access to that, if that's not an option, you can shove a trash bag in a toilet and use it if you have to. And then you can put that someplace, put it in a can, wait till things are back to normal, then dispose of it properly. Worst case scenarios, you could bury it, dump it into a hole and bury it, dig a hole and bury it. We actually have a portable toilet. It's like those camping toilets, right? You know, they have like an entire thing. You get the little powder that goes in them. You can use that thing dozens and dozens. You can use it for a couple days easily. And before you'd have to worry about dumping it. And there's really no smell or anything because you put that little powder in it. They're just for camping. They're a camping toilet. For if you're tent camping or whatever. And they were great. I mean, they're pretty good size, so you don't feel like you're roughing it or anything, but you can literally put a bucket in a 5-gallon bucket or a trash bag in a 5-gallon bucket and do that if you have to or whatever. I mean, there's you can compost it if you need to. Yeah. But it is something you want to plan ahead on and have an option there. If push comes to shove, because it is something you have to think of. You don't want to just let that stuff pile up in your toilet.
No, it's an issue.
And it can cause some problems. So have an option there for disposal of that. But also another thing that we don't think about is your trash.
Yeah.
Your actual solid waste, your trash. Now, nothing will make you start separating your trash quicker than when you don't have a way to get rid of it. So you're going to start pulling out all the things that can be composted, all the paper, cardboard, all the food products, all that stuff going compost. It should be anyway, but still a lot of that still ends up in your trash probably. So you're getting rid of all that and compost that, but that stuff that you can't compost, you're going to have to figure out something you can do with that. And when the trash isn't running, which is a possibility, is it something you can burn? Possibly, you know, generally most stuff that you can burn, you could probably compost.
I think we've seen it happen in a couple of big cities in the past few years is where they stopped pickup and
it
becomes a sanitation issue.
Yeah. It'll start piling up on you pretty fast. So you definitely got to start doing your dividing up of what is necessarily has to go in there, which honestly, depending on what you're using, if a lot of homesteaders, if you're cutting back on the processed foods to where you're not buying things in plastic, you know, metal, there's still some metal, but you know, you can store that and until a day you could actually get rid of that someplace else. If you have to, it really isn't going to cause an issue in a sanitation way. And then start breaking out, you know, taking out all the compostable materials. You can dang near get down to zero waste.
Yeah. We don't have a ton of garbage at our house.
Before we used to homestead, we take I had three kids and me and my wife, we take 2 bags a day.
Oh, wow.
Before we started homesteading. But then when we cut back on the preserved food, or, you know, cut back on the processed foods that we're buying from the store and all the stuff and, you know, the way we were eating everything, I mean, it just greatly reduced the amount of trash we had. I mean, now we take out, we still have probably, you know, we have babies around, you know.
Yeah, you have diapers and stuff. Yeah.
We have diapers and things like that, which you could get away with that, get away from that if you wanted to, too, but we don't. So there's still issues there. But you know, we'll take out a bag every couple of days now, but it went from like 2 a day to every couple of days taking out a bag. So it's quite a difference, right? It's still more than probably we should have. And there's a lot of folks that their goal is zero, you know?
Yeah. I think our biggest issue is boxes.
Yeah.
As much as we try not to buy stuff, we get stuff delivered.
We get
in
a lot of boxes.
But I started putting those in my compost and in my garden.
And I'll save them because I do like lasagna gardening. So I'll take the tape off of those, which is a cool thing about Amazon. Now they actually have that paper tape that you don't have.
Yeah.
It's compostable. So you can just cut them and we'll stack them. I'll just stack them out here in my barn and save them up for spring. And I'll start doing new lasagna beds and stuff with them. And it works really well. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that's one of those things that will fill up a trash can pretty fast if you don't compost it or use it. Zero waste should be something we're all aiming for, but it's not, it's hard. It's very hard, you know, but there's people who will take out like 1 bag of trash a year and stuff. And it's like, more power to you. I think that's awesome, but I don't think it's doable in my life right now. So but it's something you should think about, have an option there. Now we're getting into the psycho stuff. The people, you doomsday preppers, what's wrong with you people? You're talking like doomsday prepper stuff here, because we're going to talk about bug out bags. You got a bug
out
bag?
Which I kind of already talked about. I do, because
I do too.
I used it. Yeah. I have one because, you know, we've had a couple of situations where we've had family emergencies. You know, we have elderly parents and we've just needed those. And I have specific dietary needs that I can't always get met and I can't plan on getting met. So I have a bag that's ready to go.
Let's talk about some of the reasons that bug out bags aren't crazy. Okay.
Well,
some of the things that could happen.
A family emergency
where you have to get out quick and you need your stuff now and you need to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A fire.
Fires.
Yeah.
you know, there's just things going on in the area where you have to bug out back. I mentioned that train wreck.
People had to leave quick.
They were saying, get out, get out, get out.
Right. Yeah. You
grab your bags and hit the door. Don't waste time.
What if you can't go back right away? You probably have, and my bug out bag is not huge.
Yeah.
It's my bug out bag, get home bag. I call it my emergency bag. It's not huge, but I have enough food in there for a couple of days.
Yeah. I think I could probably survive 3 days.
Yeah. And I have a change of underclothes. I don't worry too much about changing my jeans and t-shirt or whatever. And usually an extra pair of socks, and I keep extra medication in there.
I have like an emergency blanket in there.
I
will keep water in my car separate from my bag. So I'll have just a couple gallons of water I usually keep in the bag. I don't keep it in the bag, but it's in my car. But because for me, I work 3 days a week and I drive like an hour each way. Right. So, I have a bag in there because something happens and I had to hoof it, or if just a situation went down kind of locally where you're stranded, but I want to get home. Like, I feel like I need to get home. I could hoof it, you know, and it took me a day and a half or whatever.
I keep tennis shoes in my car.
I could do it, you know, and I could grab my bag and I could start walking. And I mean, it's just, and these sound like crazy scenarios or maybe extreme, but they're not unheard of. And it can happen. It happens to me.
I have used my bag so many times this year, unfortunately, mostly for bad reasons. Because we have elderly parents I lived out of my bag for 4 days in July because I couldn't leave the hospital. I had a family emergency and I lived out of that bag. And then I've also had my own, if you have a medical issue, it's important to have that bag. I had a medical issue in 2021 where I ended up hospitalized, and the bag was actually really important that I had with me. So
yeah, I actually, I'll find my, like I got something spilled on me at work one day and had to have a whole change of clothes. I had my bag in my car, so I had a change of clothes with me, you know? I mean, it sounds like, you should just take clothes with you. Well, if you have in your bag, you always have that with you. You just always have something with you, and you always have, for whatever reason, whether it's an emergency or if it was just something as simple as that, you still have it. You know, there was a guy at work one day and he brought a can of soup that he's going to have for lunch, but he didn't have a can opener. Well, if you have you either have a military style can opener on your knife, or you can just have a can opener in your bag. I think it's a great thing to have in your bag if you don't have it on your knife. You know, my knife, I have a pocket knife that actually has like an old, you know, kind of pressing kind, and I opened up his can of soup with that. I mean, it sounds so basic, but it's just things you should have. And there's lists out there. You can do
We
can actually drop. Maybe I can find a link.
Every situation is going to be different. I mean, for some people, they can go to a vending machine. For me, that's sketchy. So I have to make sure I have food, and I keep the foil, like what I said earlier, I keep the foil packs just because they can freeze. They don't break. They can get squished. I prefer a backpack so I can just put it on my back instead of a bag that I have to lug. Mine's in a backpack, and
I do keep a couple bottles of water in the pack. I told you I kept a couple gallons of water in my car, but I do keep a couple bottles of water in the pack as well.
I keep a way to charge my phone, which I actually keep that with me always in my purse, which in several situations.
You have like a spare battery or a backup?
Have an anchor. I have an anchor one, and it will charge my cell phone, I think, 2 to 3 times.
I actually have a little solar charger.
Okay, yeah, that's cool.
That you can actually put on the outside of your backpack and it'll charge a phone or whatever, and carry it on your backpack and it will charge your phone while you're walking.
You'll have to put that in the links because that sounds cool.
I actually have one of them. First time I ever bought one is I actually bought it for my bicycle because I'd go biking and I had a little solar charger and I had my phone because I'd listen to music or something. So I have a little phone holder and I had a solar charger on there and it would actually do really good at keeping my phone pretty charged, you know, just even while I was listening to it and stuff. So of course, if it was sunny, you know, the sun's not out, but.
It's not always an option to plug in. I mean, the times that I was at the hospital this year, we were in the emergency room for a long time and there really wasn't anywhere to plug in. So it was nice to be able to keep my phone going so I could contact other people. So There's, I mean, it's not crazy to have.
It's not crazy.
Yeah. You don't have to call it a bug out bag. You can call it an emergency bag. And if you have kids and pets, you're going to have a different bag for everybody. Things.
Yep. And have a bag for everybody. Even the kids have their own little bag. You don't have to have everything in it yours has in it, but it should have a few things in there. I mean, make it to where they can carry it, obviously. Not something so heavy, but like a school backpack, you know, just load it with a few things. You're going to carry the bulk, you know, and let them carry just a few things in there, you know. A light change of clothes and, you know, have their own little water bottle, maybe, you know.
Well, and in here, up here in northern Michigan, where we get tons and tons and tons of snow, I have been stuck in my car.
Yeah.
So I always keep the appropriate things for my car. I mean, I keep boots in my car and a hat and mittens.
When I was, you know, driving a truck driver over the road, man, bag went with me in the truck. You know, I mean, just, I had always had a bag for, you know, like I said, 3 days at least worth of stuff in that bag that I could, if I had to get out and hoof it somewhere, I could, you know, cause I've been stranded.
Yeah.
I've been stranded due to weather a few times when I was out in the semi, you know, when I used to drive over the road and, I was stranded quite a few times.
Yeah. I mean, and it doesn't have to be doomsday stuff. Like, I mean, I've said this over and over again. We had the family emergency, the other family members that had to be at the hospital had no backup batteries, no phone chargers, no change of clothes, 4 days. So that's, you know, it just makes your life more comfortable. It's not a zombie apocalypse thing. This is just planning for bad times and hope that it doesn't happen.
And we'll skip this next one. We're going to skip on down to the one below it, because I think this one goes along with your bug out bag, and that's having backup paperwork, having things that you could need away from your home with you. And you mentioned this one, and I think it's really, really important, because if your phone dies or whatever, you drop it in the water and you can't use it anymore, who knows all those phone numbers? Do you have them all memorized?
I don't even know. If I had to call one of my daughters, I don't think I have their phone numbers memorized, and that's bad.
I will say this too. It's actually getting hard to find a payphone.
I know. Yeah.
It's actually getting really difficult to find.
Everybody has a cell phone. And so anyways, I've started keeping, I actually have a little black book where I keep phone numbers for all the people that are actually on my phone. And because we have elder parents and stuff, we've started keeping lists of their doctors and their information too.
I added a link in this section because I started really thinking about when you added this to the show and saw that, really, well, what? I mean, we have a few things. I have like backup phone numbers. It's really the thing we have a few phone numbers, right? And I thought, what else should really be there in backup paperwork? Well, I ran across this list from Provident, the ProvidentPrepper.org. They're a good website. I actually went to their website quite a few times for different things. They have a YouTube channel and they'll go over things. This article, though, they have a list of the documents they should say you should have kind of in an emergency backup paperwork. And it's a lot of copies of things. It's like car titles and house deed copies.
Oh, wow.
Those kind of things. So if you had to retry to get originals back at some, or you can even order originals, like second ones, like, and get the way they're legit and on some of this stuff. And they'll go down as far as even old family photographs that couldn't possibly be replaced, you know, have at least a printed copy of that. A lot of things. Right. So it's a good list. So you should really look through that. And they even display how to put that in a binder, like how to put it in a binder and store it.
Oh, the family binder.
Yeah. Have it in the binder to where you can take it and grab it and go and have all that ready to go. So really good idea. And I thought it was something, I think it's something you should go look at. So everybody click on that link and go check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can add some things to your phone. I had, you know, when I had my medical emergency, I didn't have a medical bracelet, which I do now wear a medical bracelet, but I did have in my phone my medical information.
Yeah.
And the emergency crew actually used my phone to look up some of that information. So
something I think should be in the backup paperwork that also goes with the thing we skipped over here, which I'm going to talk about in a second, is have a map and details of where to meet up if you're separated and something goes down. So you'll have a bug out location, which is the thing we just skipped. Well, we're getting in the weeds here. We're really crazy.
Man, that really sounds prepper-ish.
Bug out locations. Where are you going to go? But you know what? Again, I don't think it's crazy having a place to gather, meet up, to go.
No, it's not. I mean, we've always said
from your home. Yeah.
Yeah. We've said to our kids before, we always had a meetup place. It was one of the neighbors down the street. Yeah. If we had a fire and we were always like adamant, do not come back in for mom and dad. Just go out the window and go to the neighbors. Go to this neighbors. We will meet you at this neighbors.
Yeah. You could even take that to a little bit, what maybe is extreme. And once your kids grow up and move out, like my kids are scattered, you know, 50, 60 miles apart. And it's like, but if things ever went big on like a statewide level.
Yeah.
Is there a place where in like maybe a map and you're hooking them up with something where you could get to it and we could all get together and meet up and be there for one another if things really got crazy, you know? I mean, that is probably borderline doomsday stuff, but is it something
as a parent, you always want to meet up with your kids.
I want to be there for them. If something goes down, you know, it's like, maybe they don't want me helping them, but I'd like that to be an
mine
option.
Mine are thousands of miles away. So I really don't have that.
I know. And mine are, you know, mine, I got one that's, you know, 70 miles away. So it's like, it's tough, you know, it's like, but you want to have that as an option for them to be able to get to you if they needed to. Now they've got their own, that one's married.
Well, and we
family, but you know,
Between that and just a way to contact and say, hey, I'm okay.
Yeah. And that's something we didn't even really,
we didn't cover really was communications. It was
communications, but you know, cell phones, you know, will work in, even in text sometimes when they won't work on making a phone call. So you can try a text.
Yeah.
But then beyond that, there are some apps. I should have put them in the show notes because I know of one.
I'm not good at that. That's definitely something I do not.
There are apps you can actually build private communities in that will work, because sometimes apps will work when the phone won't work. There, I mean, you could actually have a two-way radios that will work for quite a distance. You can even get CBs that will work for, you know, a few miles, 4 or 5 miles. Yeah. But you know, again, you're putting a lot of faith in. And your cell phone, really, at that point. But again, having the phone numbers to where you have to get to a landline to be able to get those communications. But I just don't think a bug out location, though, is crazy, because how many times do people get removed from their homes because of a chemical spill or a fire or smoke or, you know, earthquakes?
We've seen it a lot the last few years, unfortunately.
Hurricanes happen and everybody has to leave their homes. I mean, you see people, you know, coming back to their homes after they've escaped and their homes are tore up, you know. But you know, when these things are coming, you just, you know, or you know what, while you're away, a tornado hit your house, where are you gonna go?
Yeah,
you know, I'm in tornado country. It happens, you know. People's I mean, I think especially if you live in a trailer park, there's just something about it, they want you. Okay. I'm just
like
saying,
magnet,
you have a place to go. We actually have, I mean, I think we have a seasonal camper. We have a camper we keep at a campground. I kind of think about that. I mean, we think about it as our little vacation spot that we go to a few times a year.
Right. But it's somewhere you could go if something happened to your home.
But it's also a place we could go and stay if we had to. Yeah. We
could
live there if we had to for short term.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be like the middle of the woods or something. Right, it could be your bug out location could be a family member's.
It could just be a house that, you know, that people say, yeah, you could come here if things ever, you know, hit the fan, so to speak. And yeah, I mean, just have a place you could go. Again, that's a bigger step if you have livestock and you had to have a place where they could go as well. That's kind of like their bug out location, I guess. Right. But have a place where you could go and your family could go. And I just think it's important. And it's not crazy. I just think
it's not. It's not that crazy because, we actually have a government website called ready.gov that actually talks about these things, because during these crises, the emergency staff need to be helping the people that really absolutely need our help right now. And how we can help that be better is if we already have plans in place. So we aren't the ones that need help. And it's just better to be in that position where we don't need help and maybe we can help somebody else. That's kind of always been my thought, is I have all this extra food. During the 8 days that we didn't have power during that snowstorm, the neighbors were coming to us because my husband knew how to charge their phones using the batteries that we had in the house And they were just batteries we had for like the tractor and stuff that we took out in the winter. And he used that to charge the neighbor's phone so they could call family members. And that's how a community in a neighborhood's supposed to work. And then they didn't need help. They didn't need to call emergency people in to,
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Which that brings us to actually having a few things too. So we got some links in here. I think I'm going to add a few more too, of some other things maybe you should have on hand, but there are things, I mean, it's not just knowledge, but there's actually some things you might want to have, like a weather radio, right? You want something that you can get information, because these emergency radios are not only just, they'll have emergency information, weather information, these kind of things are going out across them. This is important if all communication's kind of down. If you don't have TV and, you know, and things like that, you need a radio like that, a battery powered radio with backed up with batteries that are charged in this thing. So you can get information, because sometimes there's just important information on there you need to know. And it doesn't happen very often, but that's just it. That's the whole thing about emergency, right? You don't know when it's going to happen or if it ever will, but have one. Lights are really important. Having flashlights.
They are. I mean, the worst thing you need is the power goes out and you can't get through the house without falling and then you're hurt.
Yeah.
So we have these battery backup night lights that are plugged into the walls. If the power goes out, they light up and you can actually take them out of the wall and then they're a flashlight.
Yep.
So
yeah,
the grandkids love to play with them.
Yeah, they just give you just enough light you can get around your house without running into stuff and hurting yourself. Yeah. And get to the things you other need. So you can get to light your oil lamps and all the things, or your candle, whatever you're doing. Yeah. So gives you just enough light for that. You have in here a battery backup. That's for your phone.
It's a smaller one that I can carry. Like I don't really carry a purse, but I have a bag that I carry with me. Actually, I'm one of those weird people that carries a fanny pack because I can't stand a purse. So it's always with me just so I can charge. Of course, it doesn't help that my phone's really old and it runs out of battery pretty quick.
Yeah.
But so I can charge my phone.
Good idea. I think it's a great idea for those fellow book lovers out there. I did put a book in here from the folks I mentioned earlier, the Provident Prepper, providentprepper.org. They wrote a book, and I think it's just a straightforward book. It's a common sense guide to preparing for emergencies by Kylene and Jonathan Jones. And I just think if you want to go deeper with this and you want to have lists, and like I said, their website's just a great resource.
Oh, yeah, there's websites.
I'm a book person, so I love books. I always like to have a book in there, right? Always a book. But yeah, get the book and visit their website, because I think there's some great, and there's tons of grid websites out there. But what I like about them is they don't go I think a lot of the preparedness websites do tilt to the crazy side.
Yeah, unfortunately.
They don't. They're really about just emergency preparedness, common sense preparedness. Yeah. And I enjoy that and appreciate that. There's some crazy out there. There really is, I think. You added a couple other things here. Oh, you added the temperature alarms, which I'm glad you did.
Yeah, I'm going to add the temperature alarms. And then one of the things that's really nice is things get really busy around the homestead and you're always trying to figure out where is the emergency kit? And we actually bought a red backpack that we keep with us in our quote unquote farm truck. And it's just easy to spot because it's red. And that's where emergency kit is. And it was pretty cheap. I can't remember. It was like $9 for a bright red backpack. And then, you know, red emergency. And, and I would just do that anywhere in your house. It doesn't have to be the red backpack, but just make sure whatever it is, it just is really obvious that is what it is. So
I was watching you type this into the notes. And I seen red backpack before you got for emergency kit. And I went, red backpack. No, I don't want the zombies to see me when I'm out there walking. I want to be camouflaged.
Yeah, it just makes it easy. So what if, you know, if you need it and you need to tell a kid, you're not going to be able to explain to them in lots of words, but you're going to say in the truck is a red backpack.
Get the red backpack. Yeah. That's a great idea. Red bag. Or, if it's just a gym bag.
Or in the pantry is a red bag, or, you know, in mom's closet is a red bag.
Cause I don't know. In our house, we need to do better at this. Rachel, I'm just going to fess up as far as keeping the stuff accessibly, you know, just easy to access.
Oh yeah. Same here.
Because we need a Band-Aid, and we're rubbing through drawers and cabinets. Where do we put the Band-Aids? You know, and we're looking for stuff. And it's like, what in the world? We need to have this stuff in a location, bagged up, even where you could grab it and run it outside if we had to. I mean, I'm bad about this. And this is telling me I need to fix that, because you're right. That's important. That's really important.
Yeah. And I'm hopefully going to be taking a class whenever this person does a class more on it. But that's what that person recommended, is that you had one basically very accessible. If you're in the field, say you have a huge farm and you've got hundreds of acres and you're out in the field in your tractor, you probably should have something in the tractor with you. You know, and I have something for our pets too, because they can't always use the same things we can.
There's a device also that's came out, and I don't know why this just came to my mind all of a sudden, but I love this thing because I've seen it in action on some videos. But if you've got kids and there's choking hazards, have you seen that tool now for like helping people for choking to get food out of your throat or whatever, if you can't get it out? It's just, you put it over their mouth and it's almost like a plunger thing action, and it sucks it up out of their throat basically.
Wow.
And that thing is saving lives like crazy. And it's a tool that I think everybody should have in that bag, if you have kids, especially little kids, because it's it's for like choking.
I have one child that put everything in her mouth.
Yes.
I had to do the Heimlich twice on her.
Yeah. There's been situations where the Heimlich, you just can't get it out. And they'll have to cut a throat or whatever. This thing will suck. I guess it just does like suction, and it'll pull right back up out. And it's been saving some lives. And I think they came out a couple of years ago. I mean, we got one probably a year or so ago, and I hope we never have to use it. Right. But that could be a handy little device, having that in a bag and kids choking, man, pop that out and get it out of them.
Well, that's what all of this is about. Well, I hope Well, first, I wanted to say, I hope that you add the backpack battery, like the solar battery.
Yeah.
But the second thing I wanted to say about this, what all of this is, all of this isn't us wanting to be doomsday preppers. All of this is because, well, September is preparedness month, National Preparedness Month. And these are all things that we hope we never have to use. I mean, water storage and, you know, food storage, but specifically the medical stuff. But it happens. No matter how hard you try, it happens.
You may go 20 years without something happening, but something probably will happen in your lifetime.
Yeah. And it's just, it's still going to be stressful, but it's definitely going to be smoother if you have a few things set up and prepared. And it might actually save a life if you have a kit and can stop somebody from bleeding until the emergency crews can get there. So.
Yep. And, you know, you take this as far as you want to take it, but man, we should all just have a minimal level of all of this. You know, you should have at least a minimal level of all this. And you, like I said, you think about your situation, think about the probabilities, think about what the possibilities are of things that could happen, and then go a little beyond that, because
our earthquake's never going to happen where I am.
Probably.
But other places.
Hurricane's not going to affect me.
Right. Other places, though, that happens out. So you have to think specifically to you, and the same with the medical stuff. You have to think about your own medical situations, your own family's medical situations.
Yeah.
It's all going to be very specific to what your family and your homestead needs. But think about it. That's kind of why we're having this, is just to think about it.
And there's a lot of things we didn't get into. People were like, you didn't think about this. You didn't talk about that. And you know what? Yeah. This is bare minimum stuff. We agree.
Yeah.
This could go so much deeper and probably should. But we just wanted to touch base on these things, get your mind down that path a little bit, get you thinking about it. This is the month we should be really kind of focusing on that. You know, winter time. If you live in a place where winter is a reality like it is for us, I mean, a lot of these things can happen in winter. I mean, we can have power outages. We can get shut down in our homes because we can't get on the streets if you get a bad winter. There's a lot of things that can happen, okay, in the wintertime, especially for us. So, you know, I think it's a great time to focus because winter's just around the corner for us, you know, and it's like, be prepared for that, you know, get your cars prepared for that. Get the stuff in your cars, you know, have blankets, have things, do all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, that's just for those folks of us to deal with that, but it's just a reality. I mean, wherever you live, there's something, you know, forest fires aren't big here, but you know, like I said, snow is. So it's like, we have to think about those things. There's just things every year that are possibilities and even realities that that take a little bit of common sense preparedness. And I just think it makes sense to do that. And as homesteaders, I think there is a level of that where we all kind of participate in that as a homesteader, but maybe there are some things you weren't thinking about. And this has helped you and get your mind on it a little bit and helped you a little bit think about it. And now you want to think, I need to do that. Like, I'm glad you mentioned these temperature alarms, because I think you mentioned these once before and I didn't really take it serious, but I am thinking about it a little bit more now. And I think it's something I need to have. So good
yeah. suggestion.
So, yep. That's what we have for you today, folks. You have anything you want to add?
I think that is it.
I think that's it too. Well, folks, we appreciate you joining us today. Until next time, happy homesteading. God bless.
And grow where you're planted.
Looking around, I finally see, I think I need a change. The rat race, I want to flee, my world I'll rearrange. I'm getting back to the roots of how it's meant to be. Growing gardens, picking fruit, raising livestock, living free. It's a modern homestead. Build a modern homestead. A lot of folks don't understand why I wanna live this way. They've never eaten from their land like we do here every day. Snapping beans like grandma did, sitting on her from pool, hunting and fishing like a kid once you've done all of your chores. It's a modern homestead. Build a modern homestead. Country or city, there's a way to make this change. You gotta start today.